Hey, this is Ballsy back with episode 53 of Growing the Game with Ballsy, and I'm going to have a couple of quick episodes this week. Lots going on in the world of football here in Saskatchewan. On this episode, we are going to hear from Brian Giebert out in Saskatoon with Saskatoon Minor Football as he talks about that organization and how things are going in high school football up in that region. We'll also speak with Nick Lewis, the all-time receptions leader in the Canadian Football League, who lives here in Regina and is helping to develop young football athletes, young athletes in Regina and surrounding areas. He's got a new venture in the works here coming up that you can be a part of. And we're going to hear from Tom Clements, the former CFL legendary quarterback and NFL coach. And that's all coming up here on this episode of Growing the Game with Ballsy. This is Moving the Chains with Nick Lewis. And Nick, let's start with the Football Academy, 1621 Football Academy. I know this week you guys had an open house. Just talk about what the Football Academy is going to be about.
Football Academy, yeah, it was a great open house. Had some people come in, took a couple pamphlets away to share with others. And it's just going to be a place where the athletes, young athletes, will be able to come and get better. We want to produce an atmosphere where not only is going to be growth from the middle school kids all the way up through high school and then college, and just give them some services as far as college and pro showcases, trying to put those on to bring notoriety to a lot of the to their efforts and hard work that they're doing and they're putting into it, and then building our 7-on-7 team. That's going to be pretty special. Something I've looked into for about 5 years now. And I know Damon Allen has a team out in Toronto, and I know G-Roy Simon has a team in B.C. So I'm very excited about it and the possibilities of putting this together.
Excellent. And in terms of the Football Academy, what different type of thing are you going to be teaching them as far as football goes, you know, right from the kind of beginner age of grade 7 all the way up through high school? What are you going to be looking at there in terms of a teaching emphasis?
Yeah, so for the grade 7, 8, and 9, we're going to introduce them to the workouts, the way that we're going to work out, to strengthen and prepare. We want to prepare for our moment, and our moments are going to be the showcases or be the game days, and just understand how to take care of your body and get you physically better as far as speed and agility and things like that. We want to get you better. And then for the 10th, 11th, and 12th graders and up, we're going to have they're going to be scheduled together so that we have people working on the same planes, and we want to be able to focus in and put these workouts together.
Nick Lewis joining us here for Moving the Chains. And you're talking to me when we were talking off-air about it being affordable, because a lot of times when people think about this and they're getting worked out by an all-time receptions leader, they're thinking, oh, it's going to cost me a lot of money. I can speak from experience here. My son's worked out with you in the summer. Very affordable. You're not going to find top-notch teaching from a guy that did it both at the college level as a walk-on and then coming to the CFL. You're not going to find better teaching than with Nick Lewis. So, Nick, yeah, you guys are going for you want to help the kids out, and you're doing it affordably too.
Yes, and that's the biggest thing, is having everyone have the opportunity to be a part of this. And right now we're looking at sessions. So we will have sessions in 1621club.com they'll have an app to where you can book in classes. Classes right now will be no more than 10 to 12 kids. And as you get older, the numbers go down. This is not come in and everybody spread out doing weight work or anything like that. This is everyone in a small group doing skill-specific work. And that's what we're going to focus on, is everyone getting better, not just one or two people. So with that being said, you know, we're really focused on that app, being able to book in a class, and you just come to the class. Yeah. So right now our packages is like a drop-in fee or 5, 10, and 20. We've even discussed the unlimited package, so that's something that we're looking forward to. We're going to tinker with it a little bit and see what works best for everyone.
All right, go to the website and check that out. And, yeah, it's great. You know, when you look back in your in your career, how much did you benefit from something like this, or how much would have you benefited from something like this?
I mean, I benefited from the fact of when I was – I benefited from the fact that when I was in college, my senior year going in, I got that's when I first got personal training. I had a track coach named Nick Scott at Pioneer Tracking that I worked out with. And as well, I was working out with my cousin who owned his own gym, who trained me my last year of college all the way through my first 11 years in the CFL. So I understand the benefits of having someone to hold you accountable, one, but also to teach you, not only just teach you, but teach you how to take care of yourself. And the way that I am, I invest in people. So when I'm doing this, I'm investing my life into these kids, and I want to see them succeed and want to see them do what they want to do.
You're going into your university's Hall of Fame, I believe, here coming up. You're not that long from now. Do you have to pinch yourself that you're going into your walk-on at what was the university? South Arkansas State, or what was it again?
Southern Arkansas University.
Yeah. Okay, so you walk on there. It's Southern Arkansas University. You walk on there. Now you're in the Hall of Fame there, and you're one day going to be in the Canadian Football Hall of Fame. You're the all-time receptions leader when you retire. Do you have to pinch yourself sometimes?
Oh, of course. Growing up and being a kid, played in a small town, Texas, where nobody really went to college and played football. It was big for Friday night football, but after that, it was not a lot of kids were going and playing college football. So to be able to walk on, to break some records and really set my mark there. And then to be the last person signed in Calgary in 2004 and to do what I did in the CFL is very gratifying. But it just goes to show, it's like sometimes we feel like, okay, well, I wasn't that great in middle school. I wasn't that great in high school, but I kept getting better. And it seems like at every level I just kept getting better. And that's all you can ask for is just an opportunity.
You know, the one thing I picked up on while you're working out, my son in the park, just watching from time to time, is that, I forget, you guys worked out for 2.5 months, almost 3 months. You didn't use a football once. And we're talking about teaching a receiver how to be a receiver. You didn't use a football once. And I always get asked this question, especially towards the end of your career. People would, and I even joke with you at banquets, you know, look like you were run walking there. Like, how does Nick Lewis get open? But after watching you and after watching how you get, you know, my kid to run his patterns, I could see how you got open. You think the game. Can you teach kids how to think the game? Can you teach them football IQ?
You can, and that's one thing I want to incorporate as well is boardroom stuff. We have a boardroom, and we'll be able to start doing that and breaking down some of their film and helping them with some of those aspects as well. The biggest thing about being a receiver, it's all about your transition. If you're moving in one direction, you always have to feel like a DB is on a string, and you can make him move whatever way you want, but you always have to be in control of yourself. So if you can transition well into your out route and things like that, then you're obviously going to be ahead of him. I never ran. I can run a lot faster than people see me run. It was just pointless to me to try to run harder and waste more energy when I knew I wasn't outrunning people anyway. So I would just jog and catch the ball and use my energy to break tackles instead of using my energy to try to run harder.
That's interesting. That's a really good point, Nick, and I'm glad you brought that up. Now, lastly, to wrap up this interview, let's transition over to the Rough Riders. They obviously spent a lot of their money on defense and on special teams, and they're winning with defense and special teams. But what are you seeing from their receivers and their pass offense? It looks like it's developing. I know Kenny Shaw had that bad drop in the end zone there. Do you ever have a drop like that, Nick, where it just doesn't land where it's supposed to, where it's a clear drop?
I don't know. I don't know if I ever had a drop like that. But there's some tough catches, and you're put in tough situations, and especially in tight games like that when there's really not a rhythm or a flow. Mm-hmm. It's kind of hard, right, because you're pressing to make a play. You want to make the play that's going to change the game, and you in those games you're like, okay, one touchdown wins.
Yeah.
And you want to make that play, so it puts a lot of pressure on you. And sometimes it's just when you're flowing offensively, you just make plays.
Yeah,
I think the guys had a couple drops, but I think for the most part, they're playing very well offensively when they get the opportunities.
Yeah. Do you feel like this offense has the capabilities? My concern with this offense is will they have the capability to score when they have to in the playoffs? Because you know there's going to be a time where they have to score. And, you know, there was three situations here, two where they were set up on short fields with the Eskimos and couldn't score a touchdown and manufacture anything. I know they missed a couple of field goals. They got the pick six from Willie Jefferson. My concern with this offense, will they be able to score when they have to in the playoffs?
And that's a big concern because – when you play a team like Edmonton, who runs predominantly cover three, they run in some cover four. They really don't blitz a lot. They're very basic defensively. You would think you would be able to pick them apart just a little bit easier than a team like Calgary, who changes their defense every week, or different teams in the CFL. So when you have that team like Edmonton or Hamilton that are very basic defensively, you would like to see them put up more points or find some ease with getting first downs. And so when you struggle against those two teams, it does bring in concern.
Willie Jefferson with a pick six going back for a touchdown. And unlike the Winnipeg game where he's kind of showboating, I think that was a heads-up play to kill some of the clock. Do you think he was planning to do that, actually, or do you think he was showboating and it looked like he was planning to do that?
No, it just comes in as far as being football savvy. When he looks back around the 20, he notices only one lineman's chasing. You actually see, I think Mike Riley and a couple of the linemen, they're actually walking off the field. So at that point, he's thinking, hey, it's the last 2 minutes of the game. How much time can I run off?
Yeah.
And showboating would have been one lineman, you got a blocker right there to stay out of the end zones and try to just make him miss a couple to run more time off. But when the lineman got within about 5 yards of him, he stepped in the end zones, probably wasted an extra 10 seconds. And as we know in the CFL, every second counts when you're trying to go score on the other end.
You know, lastly, I want to bring this up because I brought it up in our call-in show. You know what's amazing to me is they never call pass interference on the jump ball at the end of a half or a game. It's never called. And if a guy was tugging on a guy in a regular situation, he'd be called for pass interference. And I often wonder, too, those prevent defenses. If I'm doing a prevent defense like our co-host Mike McCullough said, I would just instruct my guys, either you bat that ball down like it's volleyball, or you stand there, wait for the guy to catch it unless it's in the end zone, and you tackle him in the field of play, because if Ed Gainey doesn't make that tackle, it's a tie ball game.
Yes, and that's always because there's always going to be pushing, and there's always going to be a little shoving inside that pile down there, because receivers want to create space so they can jump, and DBs want to not let a receiver jump. So there's a little more physicality within the Hail Mary that makes it a little difficult to call it one way or the other, because I'm pretty sure if you review it, you'll see receiver push, but you'll also see DBs grab and clutch. So,
yeah, it's an interesting play for sure. Nick, thanks for this. And once again, check out that website. What's that website again?
1621club.com.
All right. Thanks for this, Nick. And we'll see how that fires up. I'm sure it's great for the next level athletes here, not just football players, but in any sport too, you were telling me.
Yeah, so it's going to be for any sport. Right now we're going to focus on the football aspect, and the academy comes in to the portion where we're going to do these showcases and the 7-on-7. We're also planning another open house at the end of this month. We have special pricing for the open houses and anyone who joins before November 1st. So, just be aware. I'm going to be putting some more stuff on social media. You'll be able to get any updates on 1621club.com. And, yeah, just stay tuned. It's going to be big.
Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
This week on Where Are They Now, I had a chance to catch up with legendary CFL quarterback Tom Clements. Of course, you remember him from 1976. He was the quarterback that threw that ill-fated touchdown to Tony Gabriel that sunk the Riders in the 76 Grey Cup that many Rider fans will never forget. He also quarterbacked our Rough Riders for a brief spell before moving on to Hamilton and then more success with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. He then went on to college football to coach with Notre Dame and most recently with the Green Bay Packers in the National Football League, coaching the likes of Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. Here's what Tom Clements had to tell us. Now, Tom, what pops into your mind when you think about Saskatchewan, and more specifically, your short time here with the Rough Riders?
Well, the main thing is that that's the place of my daughter's birth. My first child was born in Regina when I was with the Rough Riders, so that's a very fond memory. But I did only have a short stay there before I was traded to Hamilton. But even though we didn't win many games at that time, I have fond memories of my stay there, met some good people, and It was a nice place to play football.
I know, watching you over the years, I was only a seven-year-old boy when Tom Clements was here in 1979, Ron Lancaster in his first year coaching. And I'm as I watch your career progress, I'm thinking, man, would it have been something if Tom was here with an offensive line that could block for him and some talent around him? Did you kind of have that wish when you were here in that brief spell? Because you did have a young, inexperienced front line in front of you there.
Yeah, that's true. There were a number of rookies, and my time there came at the end of Ronnie's time, where they had he was playing quarterback. He had a lot of experience. People on the line had a lot of experience, and they all seemed to leave at the same time, and they had to rebuild. And you know, that's difficult. But a couple years after that, the Rough Riders had one of the best offensive lines in the CFL, so it paid dividends later on. But unfortunately, when I was there, there were some growing pains.
I did a dinner earlier this year in a small town, southwestern Saskatchewan, with Tony Gabriel. He told me on that famous catch in 1976 that you changed the play in the huddle. It came in different from the sidelines. What do you remember about that play and that 76 Grey Cup that broke Saskatchewan Rough Rider fans' hearts?
Well, Tony has it somewhat right. Someone was coming in with a play, and I already had a play in mind to call, and I waved. It was Gary Kuzik, who was a wide receiver, was coming in with a play from the sideline, and he got about halfway there, and I just waved him back, and I went ahead and called the play that I had in mind, and that was a play to Tony, and it was obviously a very memorable play. It enabled us to win the championship. It was a hard-fought game. The Rough Riders were a great team. They were favored in that game, and fortunately we got some big plays. We got a punt return for a touchdown, and we got that play at the end of the game with only a little bit of time left. So fortunately we were able to pull it out.
Was that an agonizing time? Gabriel's wide open. You throw him a pass. Did it seem like forever that ball was going to come down?
No, not really. I mean, it was it was a play that we had run a number of times throughout the year, and even in previous and later years, we ran that play. It was it was one of our base plays, and we executed it a number of times. So it's just when you call a play in a situation like that you have a lot of experience with, and you know the ins and outs of it, you just react and execute, and hopefully it goes your way.
Now, Tom Clements had an unbelievable college career with Notre Dame, including leading them to an unblemished national championship in 1973. You go undrafted. Did you come to the Canadian Football League with a bit of a chip on your shoulder, the fact that you weren't drafted in the NFL?
Well, I don't know if I'd say that. I mean, it was I wanted to continue to play football. I had an opportunity to try out at another position in the NFL at that time, but I wanted to continue to play quarterback, and I looked at it as an opportunity, and it was a little bit different type of game than the American college game, and once I got used to it, I enjoyed it very much.
Were you surprised at the quality of talent in the CFL when you got up here?
Well, I didn't know a whole lot about it. We got a few games at that time on television, and I remember, I had played at Notre Dame, and Joe Theismann had played at Notre Dame, and we saw some games when he was playing with Toronto. So I had a little bit of an understanding of it, but really didn't get into it and know the ins and outs of it until I went up there.
What was Tom Clements' best quality as a player? I've heard a lot of your teammates, James Murphy, Tony Gabriel, Joe Poplosky, who I've talked to, they say calm, cool, knowledgeable, et cetera, et cetera. What would you say was your best attribute as a quarterback?
Well, I think what they said, I probably would agree with. I tried not to let things bother me. I tried to be as prepared as I could going into a game. And I don't know what it's like up there now, but at that period of time, all the quarterbacks called their own plays, which was a lot of fun. But yeah, it was a lot of responsibility. So I think I was a good play caller. And made adjustments during the course of the game that enabled us to have some success.
Now, you studied law. You're an accomplished lawyer. How did that help you with becoming a quarterback? By that, I mean, as a lawyer, you'd have to have a lot of preparation. As a quarterback, you got to have a lot of prep work, too.
Well, that's true. I mean, it's a lawyer is a you have to be a detail-oriented person, and as a quarterback, as I just mentioned, calling your own plays, you have to be detail-oriented. You have to have a play in mind and a thought in mind for each situation that might arise during the course of the game, and practice those plays during the course of the week, and be ready to execute them come game time. So it's a lot of work, a lot of study, and hopefully you have the right play in mind at the right time.
You had a great stint as a quarterback with the Tabbies after you left the Saskatchewan Roughriders. And then September 21st, 1983, you're traded to Winnipeg. Was it something that you wanted? Were you surprised you were traded? What do you remember about that day?
Well, yeah, I was surprised. I didn't anticipate it. I remember my wife and I were sitting at home watching TV at night, and then the sports came on, and they were talking about the big trade, me for Dieter Brock, and that's the first I heard of it. And so I had to call the Tiger Cats the next day and say, "Is this true?" And they said, "Yeah." And I was on my way to Winnipeg shortly thereafter. But I enjoyed my time in Hamilton. But really, my years in Winnipeg were, some of the better years during my career. And we had a great organization, some great teams, and was able to win another Grey Cup championship. So it worked out.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a second. But wait a minute. So the great Tom Clements finds out on the TV he's been traded. Were you mad?
Well, I was probably a little upset. I don't recall exactly, but you don't like to find out that way. I'm a person who doesn't like sudden change quite like that. And once I got over it and got to Winnipeg and saw the type of talent and organization we had there, I was glad that it happened.
Yeah, what an explosive team in Winnipeg. Willard Reeves, Poplawski, I think Rick House was there. You had James Murphy. Just talk about those weapons.
Well, we had a lot of good weapons on offense. Jeff Boyd was also there at that time. As you mentioned, Rick and Joe were the inside receivers, and Willard was the running back. We also had James Sykes when Willard got hurt, and we had an outstanding line. Chris Walby, who's a Hall of Famer, was there at that time, and we just had a lot of talent offensively, and Cal Murphy was the coach. And he was a great coach, and it was, as I said, we were fortunate to field some outstanding teams and win a championship. So it was a lot of fond memories of my days in Winnipeg.
Who did you have the best chemistry with, Tom, with those names you mentioned on offense? If you had to pick one guy that maybe you had the best chemistry with?
That'd be hard to do because, I think 1 year we had three guys with tons of catches and over 1,000 yards, and I had chemistry with who was ever open.
Spoken like a quarterback and later an offensive coordinator. We'll get into that in a second. Well, how surreal was it for you, though, to play in the 84 Grey Cup, a frigid game in Edmonton, against Dieter Brock and the Hamilton Tiger Cats, the guy you were traded for?
Well, it was a little bit different. I had been to Hamilton only, I think the trade occurred in 83, and
yeah,
the next year we played in the Grey Cup, so still knew a lot of people there, knew a lot of the coaches and a lot of the players, and so it was fun to go up against them, and fortunately we were able to pull it out.
If you had a chance to relive one play or one game or, one moment in the CFL, is there one that comes to mind for you?
Obviously, on the good side, the play we talked about in Ottawa in the Grey Cup,
yeah,
It was a lot of fun, and winning the championship in Winnipeg later on in '84. You'd love to relive that, but I'd like another shot at a couple of times in the Eastern or Western final where we weren't successful. It would have been nice to get to the Grey Cup and win a couple more.
Did you always want to be a coach? Was it something you've always wanted?
No, it wasn't. I always thought I'd play my career and then be a lawyer for the rest of my life. That's why I went to law school in the off seasons during my. I think I started after my fifth year. I went back to school and thought it was time to start preparing for life after football. And I had a long career, played 13 years. And then practice law for the big law firm in Chicago. That's what I wanted to do. Did that for about four or five years or so. And as I got into doing it more, I missed football and did not like as much the practice of law. So I had an opportunity to go to Notre Dame and start my coaching career, and I'm glad I made the move.
Now, you've coached a lot of good quarterbacks, and we'll talk about some of the ones that you've helped have career years. Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre. If you had to win one game, could you choose which one you wanted the quarterback your team to win?
Well, as you say, they're both great quarterbacks. It's difficult, but if I had to choose one, probably Aaron. He just does everything exactly right. Takes care of the football, and he has a lot of talent. Both he and Brett have a lot of talent, and maybe give the edge to Aaron because of that factor.
Now, you've coached guys like Elvis Gerbach, Cordell Stewart, Kelly Holcomb, and Tommy Maddox to career years. Do you get more satisfaction as a coach when you do something like that, or you're coaching Aaron Rodgers in an MVP type of season? What's more of satisfaction as a coach?
Well, I think all of those situations are satisfying. If you can help a guy play well, you kind of live vicariously through your players. Obviously, you can't play the game anymore, but you can try to get another guy ready to play. And if he can play at a high level, that's great. So you have satisfaction with every scenario, but you love to have those superstars.
This is Growing the Game, brought to you by our friends at Pizza Hut and the Concord Group over there in Saskatoon. Also by Paul Waldo, the home expert team over there at Royal LePage, and by Wheel Estate. Check them out at wheelestate.ca. I'm joined now on the phone by Brian Giebert, who heads up Saskatoon Minor Football. Brian, thanks for joining us. It's been a while since we chatted. How has football season gone there with the Saskatoon Minor Football?
Yeah, you know, football season's been great up here. Our flag league's been awesome. Our Tykes on Spikes been awesome. And you know what? High school football just never seems to have been closer than it is this year. There's been some great matchups this year, and we're really coming down to the wire here.
Okay, so we'll talk about the matchups in a second. I want to point out there's a big matchup in Regina this week, as it's going to be the undefeated Leboldus Golden Suns, surprisingly, up against the 4-1 Riffle Royals. Big matchup there. Riffle can win out the last two games. They finished first, otherwise Leboldus wins. Looks like they'll secure first place. So that's going to be a big matchup at Mosaic Stadium. Give me some of the matchups here this week in Saskatoon.
Well, you know, our 3A play is wrapping up here this week in Saskatoon. So Tommy Douglas takes on Evan Hardy. BJM's got a matchup with North Battleford. And Marion Graham is taking on Prince Albert Carleton, who's really been an improved team over their past few years. So PA Carleton has given a lot of teams some troubles this year. And so, we're seeing some different teams this year. In fact, Aiden Bowman, Holy Cross, and Centennial all have byes this week, as there's a little bit different schedule. And then one of the more exciting games actually this week is E.D. Fian plays Bedford Road, and it's E.D. Fian's first year back in high school football in nearly 10 years here, and they're playing their rivals from down the road on Rush Home Road there. So I imagine that'll be a pretty exciting game for those teams
so
as well.
E.D. Fian, forgive me because I'm based in Regina, I know the name, but why have they been gone for 10 years?
Well, you know what? When they built the new schools here in Saskatoon, Edie Fionn was a Catholic school that they just had a smaller population and could no longer support a football team. So kids from Edie Fionn were available to Bethlehem High School, but they've had a resurgence in their population and just a great staff there that is has really done a great job of fundraising and building the community back in that school and the sports community. And they're back on the field playing football now. So it's great there to have that Battle of Rushcombe Road back that features Bedford Road, Edie Fionn, and Mount Royal. So they've got some great competition between all three of them, and it looks like Mount Royal's winning out a little bit this year in those battles.
How do you feel about the health of high school football in Saskatoon in terms of popularity and where it's going? I know back when we played, it was a lot more popular. I went to a high school, McGuigan High School, which no longer exists, a school of 350, and we had 80 kids come out for football. Now you're lucky if you get 35, 40 come out in a school of Riffle that's like 800, 900. How's the health of high school football in Saskatoon? Where do you see it headed?
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring it up because I've had this conversation with quite a few people this year, and I would say the quality of high school football players has never been higher than it is right now. We have an amazing quality of high school football players. But it's our quantity of players that certainly is lacking a little bit, and you know, part of that is we're starting to see fewer and fewer in staff coaches that are in school coaches that are walking the hallways, you know, beating the drum to get kids out that maybe typically wouldn't have, and you know, it's really sad to see that there's fewer and fewer kids that are coming out, like you said, that just fill those rosters and play those, you know, special teams roles and those roles on the team that really are invaluable. And another thing is, I mean, just being a part of something within your school, getting to wear your school colors, it doesn't seem to be as promoted as strongly as it has in the past. And I think that's something we need to really revisit and get back to it and look at, you know, making the game more attractive to new Canadians, mm-hmm. and maybe a bit of our immigrant population and just trying to extend it there. And I mean, you know, Regina's done a great job taking a lead with the Women's High School Football League, but I think there's really opportunities to grow the game and to make some real strides there. And I know we're looking at having a women's high school football team next year to hopefully compete with Regina and Yorkton and Melville and those and Musselman and those communities out there. But yeah, like you said, it would be great to see more kids out playing, repping their school colors, taking pride in their in their school's performance. That's something we need to get back to.
What could be a bigger deal than you talked about Edie Fionn? Actually, you know, you got a team on the field, your school comes, your school's back after 10 years, you rally behind that team. Or you look, I talked about Riffle and Lobolas just as an example. You're playing the game at the best stadium in the country this week for first place, and you got fans in the stands. It doesn't get any better than that as a young kid. That might be the biggest thing you ever do in your life athletically.
No, it doesn't. And the other thing, you know, going back to I don't think the quality of football player has ever been higher in the history of our game here in Saskatchewan. It's great entertainment. Like, you got to get out to these games. High school football is very entertaining, exciting to watch. And, you know, we're seeing great parity in both the big cities and really across the province. I mean, there's been some 6-9-man games that have been really exciting this year,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, and you know what? Of course, so that kind of just piggybacks what happened in the summer with the U18 team winning the national championship. And it stands to reason that Saskatoon and area and Regina area would have great football players, and therefore the competition would be great. You know, the one thing that does bug me, our mentality in Canada, and we saw it with the Rams and the whole clerical error, and now they may be stripped of three wins. Well, they're stripped of three wins. I think there's plans in motion to fight it. But, you know, the thing that bugs me is we don't go all in Canada. We don't go all in with the clearinghouse. We don't go all in on the clerical side. And we don't go all in on the side of athletics in schools, too. I mean, in the States, high school football coaches are paid. They're paid to be high school football coaches. I'm not saying that's going to happen here or it should happen, but, you know, we take for granted what teachers do and the time and commitment that it takes to put on these teams, whether it be football, volleyball, track, whatever. But, I mean, football, let's talk football because that's what this website's all about and this podcast's all about. We don't appreciate enough, government level, whatever, parents, we don't appreciate enough what the teachers and what these guys do and girls do to help get our athletes on the field.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, not enough can be said about the teachers. And you know what? that volunteer their time, that go out there and really enrich these kids' lives with giving a quality sporting experience, you know, teaching the virtues of the game, you know, getting up when you're knocked down and fighting through adversity and you know, persevering together as a team and you know, communication with each other and all those sorts of things that come out of the game that really are invaluable. And yeah, there really needs to be maybe more on the end of incentives for coaches to get them out there and just, you know, make their lives a little bit easier. Because, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, it's the experiences on the football field or in the basketball gym that are the memories that kids are going to keep for the rest of their lives and really endear them to their schools. And, you know, that's something that we can't lose sight of going forward.
Last question for you. Do you think it's easier now than it was to earn a college scholarship? By that, I mean, you talk about there's not as many people out playing now, so there's less of a pool, but you said the quality's better. So is it easier or is it harder than it was to get a college scholarship? And I'm talking specifically for football.
You know, I think we're seeing more kids training than we ever have. So, I mean, inherently, the competition is rising, but the opportunities are also rising. I mean, we're seeing great scholarship programs throughout the Canada West and through junior football. I mean, I'm pretty sure the Hilltops, you know, gave out nearly $100,000 in scholarships last year through their program as well. You know, so I think the opportunities to use football in your favor as an athlete to get an education paid for are certainly out there. The NCAA is paying more attention to Saskatchewan, you know, more than they have in the past. And I think that's great for our athletes as well. And, you know, I think it's, but the competition is also rising up. There's kids training a lot more, but one of the unique things about football is it's the only sport where the roster actually gets larger to the higher levels that you get, right? Like, yeah, when you play on a basketball team with 12 players in high school, you're trying to make a university basketball team with only 12 or 13 players on it as well. Football, you know, we carry 90 players on a lot of these university rosters, so the opportunities actually expand at the higher level, and you know, the opportunities to earn a scholarship and things like that certainly are presenting themselves more. And I mean, you know, with the success that we've had on the national level with our Football Saskatchewan U18 team and our U16 teams from South Sask and North Sask, we're gaining the attention of the entire nation now. So, you know, opportunities for scholarships in Ontario or Eastern Canada that weren't there, you know, 10 years ago are now available to our athletes more than ever.
That's Brian Giebert. He came up from the grassroots and the growing the game type of segment, and he played in the Canadian Football League and is now helping to make Saskatoon football great with the Saskatoon Minor Football. Thanks for this, Brian.
Yeah, no problem. Pleasure.
And just before I wrap up episode 53 of Growing the Game with Ballsy, wanted to make mention of a couple of things. Of course, the University of Regina Rams hosting Alberta this weekend. Rams need to win out to have a chance at the playoffs after being stripped of those three victories. On the next podcast, I'll speak with Steve Bryce about the ramifications of that and how his team is dealing with it going forward. But they're going to have to deal with playing Alberta without their starting quarterback, Noah Pickton. He's got a bad infection in one of his toes, could barely stand, was an emergency this week on antibiotics. So he most likely will not suit up against the Alberta Golden Bears. So Seb Britton will have to get the Rams that big victory at the quarterback spot for the U of R. The U of S Huskies on the road in Vancouver to take on the UBC Thunderbirds. Of course, the Thunderbirds, benefactors of one of those wins by forfeit that was taken away from the Rams. So Blake Neal's squad, which really has soiled the sheets early on this year, has a chance to get up from the mat and a big four-point game against Scott Flory and the U of S Huskies. Hilltops and the PFC, they are cooled and in first place in familiar territory for the four-time defending national champions. And they're going to wait to see who they're going to play in the playoffs. And things are going to shake down this weekend. The Regina Thunder take on the Calgary Colts. A Thunder win and a Huskies loss to the Wildcats in the Battle of Edmonton means Regina gets second place in a home playoff game. If not, Regina would finish in third with a victory over the Colts. And if the Huskies were to win over the Wildcats, they would take second place. So still some to be determined in the PFC. Want to thank my sponsors, David Dubé, the Concord Group at Pizza Huts in Saskatoon. Thanks to David for stepping up once again and supporting local athletics. He is definitely a big contributor in Saskatchewan in that regard. Want to thank Paul Waldo over at Royal LePage, the home expert team. Check him out in the real estate game, 306-502-5355. And if you have a travel trailer you want to rent out next camping season, or you want to rent a travel trailer, go to wheelestate.ca and get going now, because things fill up fast and all their rentals backed by a $1 million insurance policy. Until next time, talk to you later.